The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Welcome to The Dory Monson Show. Jack Stein sitting in for Mr. Dory Monson. Don't want to waste anybody's time, so let's get right into The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Big local.
Oh, man. I love doing Dory's show, Nicole. I always appreciate it when you guys ask me to do it. And it pains me that I was not able to do it earlier this week when Dory was not feeling well.
I know. You and Dory, you guys keep having the same days unavailable. Whether you're sick, on vacation, whatever it is, it's always the same days.
I know. But then when you said, oh, can you do it on Friday? Because Dory's got to take a family day. I said, of course, I would love to do it, especially because I got a story that Dory and I think Dory would have a massive rant about this. I can rant about it as well, though probably not as good as Dory, but I'll say this. So our good friend Matt Markovich over at Q13 has shown us that despite the fact that there's a new sheriff in town, in Bruce Harrell, and he has set down that there's going to be a change. There's going to be a change all throughout Seattle. According to Matt Markovich over at Q13, not so much. So we all remember March 4th, Mayor Bruce Harrell announced Operation New Day, emphasis by the Seattle Police Department, prosecutors from the city attorney, King County and the Department of Justice. They're going to heighten coordination and tackle the issue. And they send undercover cops down to 3rd Avenue, 12th Avenue, Jackson Street, Little Saigon. And they said, you know what? We're going to start busting up these crime rings. We're just going to start busting up these shoplifters. They end up arresting about 21 people. 18 were taken down to King County Jail. And then, Nicole, happy story. They all stayed in jail, and now they're all going to prison. And that's the end of that story.
The way it goes. And to be clear, that's 21 people in one day at Target.
Yes. At that one Target that no human being should go to. That didn't happen at all. They basically released all of them. So booking reports show that 7 of the 9 were booked into jail, with some spending the night until they appeared in front of a judge the following day. All but one was released from jail on their promise to appear on their next court date, which they did not do. Surprise of surprises. And some of these people, Nicole, you and I were talking about this earlier. Samantha Craner, 32 gross misdemeanor convictions or cases against her, mostly for theft. Rosalinda Warren is 48 years old, 41 gross misdemeanors, 7 felonies, 6 misdemeanors. Just let them go.
Right.
It's
a city attorney issue still. I know that they're backlog. I know, but things are supposed to be different.
I understand the desire to have some kind of optic change or some kind of optic win for people like Bruce Harrell and saying that there's a new sheriff in town. But when you don't actually follow through with it, and then we have to find out that all of these people just go back out onto the street, what that tells me is that you're adding to the problem that we already have. Like, these criminals view the justice system and their interaction with the justice system as a game. They don't actually view it in the way that you and I view it, which is something to be respected and something to be avoided in many cases, which is why we don't steal stuff and why we don't commit crimes. And when you make it a game to these people where they can go in and they can take stuff and then they get sent a booking and then right back out again, they go back out into the streets. And what do they say to their friends? I can do whatever I want to do. So it's just the same old story, but like with a new mayor in town. So I'm hoping that this changes. I'm hoping that there's some improvement. I'm hoping that Bruce realizes that you just can't put a new can of paint on top of it and say that you fixed it. There are deep-rooted problems within the system, this being the main one. You can't arrest people and then just release them immediately back out into the world and expect anything to be different. Anyway, up next in
The Big Lead, top trending.
Next up in The Big Lead, Hannah Scott joins us. Hannah Scott, my personal savior here on Cairo Radio. Thanks so much for coming on, Hannah Scott.
Always my pleasure. Always my pleasure.
So, Hannah, you're coming in live from outside of your dentist's office. That's how much you care about your profession. That's how dedicated you are to the world of broadcast journalism. And we salute you, Hannah Scott, as a true patriot.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's not the first time. I've done multiple things like this from inside the doctor's office on the table even before.
So what's going on with Chris Reichdahl and COVID? I'm sure it's good news, and I'm sure we can all go back to living our lives and we no longer have to deal with any of this frustration and sadness and all this other stuff.
Well, close. I mean, he was given an update to the State Board of Education over a couple of days this week. And on the COVID situation, he said, look, we're back in school for the most part. Everybody's there in person. We are having some outbreaks that happen here and there. So in those cases, they, you know, they might have some quarantine going on. They have, in some cases, gone and reverted back to the remote situation, but just for a couple of days. And he said that was really, really rare. And it's far and few between. So that's basically the gist. The one mandate, all the mandates are gone for schools. The one mandate, though, that is still in effect is the mandate to require vaccination for for all volunteers and staff, right? All the education staff. So that is something. Overall, he said, collectively across the state, they lost about 200 or so education employees of various degree to who just wouldn't get vaccinated. So, you know, not a huge number compared to some other, like just local departments we've seen. But he said the governor is reviewing that right now, and he predicted that that mandate might come to an end sometime this summer.
Okay, yeah. I feel like this COVID thing, it was over like 3 or 4 months ago. And now when I read about, oh, cases are surging in this county.
Right, I got that vibe here, too.
I go, I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily say that like 24 cases counts as quote unquote surging. And the other thing that makes it so frustrating for me, and Dory talks about this and John talks about this as well. Cases does not mean that someone ends up in the hospital on a ventilator.
Yeah, they don't really. It's not a good metric.
It's an awful, awful, awful metric. One of Sarah's friends contracted COVID-19 for the second time. And so do we now, we count him as a case, right? That's fine.
Yeah.
He's a 23-year-old young man who works at a rehabilitation facility. He's going to stay home for 10 days and then he's going to go back to his job. Do we need to then count that number, throw it all over, then put him in the pile and say, cases are surging, and people can't go. It just seems like when we do this hysteria, I think people are burnt out on it to such a degree that they don't even, the word surging and raging.
They don't matter. I was just telling my husband that this morning. I said, I don't think that people are even capable of hearing that again. They're just like, it just goes right over them for the most part a lot of times because they're like, no, I'm not, I just can't. I think a right. lot of people are numb to some of those kind of, trigger words, if you will, that are being like, that you're talking about the surge and this and that. The cases matter. So, and I know John always talks about this too. Cases, they don't, because you're right. Most people don't get terribly sick. Most people don't die. The reason though that they matter is that they are often a predictor for what's to come in the lag, right, which is more hospitalizations and more deaths. Right now, I was kind of surprised to learn that we're still seeing about 12 to 15 deaths a day in this state from COVID, about 135 or so a month was the number that I saw. So that's a little higher than I had thought, but, and they're going to go up, you know, that's going to happen with this surge that they're talking about. I heard from both the, UW Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation guy, Dr. Christopher Murray. He's the guy who did a lot of the modeling that the governor was using throughout the pandemic. And, he came out and he said, look, and what it was reaction to this millionth death in the U.S. that the White House was talking about yesterday. And both he, Dr. Christopher Murray, and then the infectious disease expert over at the UW, Dr. Scott Lynch, said it's a sign and evidence of how unprepared we were. The fact that the death toll got that high, how terribly managed things were basically at the beginning. And hopefully this is a learning lesson for all of those, you know, people in charge to right now invest much more in pandemics to come, because one, Dr. Murray said that's definitely going to be that there's going to be more variants of COVID that can be worse. The variants, the way that they're behaving now, are they're more contagious and they're learning, and so there's still an issue there, and they want to be able to have investment to be sure that they can handle that. But he said more importantly is there's going to be other pandemics from different things altogether, and we need to not get caught with our pants down basically like we did with COVID and be so ill prepared.
I remember when COVID first broke. Hannah, I might have told you this story, but indulge me if you've already heard this story.
Sure.
I was working at a radio station in California, and the owner of that radio station, he would rub elbows with other major radio station owners. He would always kind of be the kind of guy who would go to radio conventions and talk to people who own a cluster of radio stations in Pennsylvania or people from many other broadcasting organization. So anyway, I'm doing the afternoon drive time radio show, and boss man comes in, the owner comes in, and he gives me the go to commercial sign. So I go, well, we'll be right back, and we go to commercial. And he says, I got a scoop. I got a scoop. One of my friends from the radio convention that I went to the other day, he's on a cruise ship right now, and there's a massive COVID outbreak on the ship. And I just thought, oh, okay. So he goes, we got to get him on. This is gonna put the radio station on the map. This is breaking news. So we bring the guy on, and this is supposedly like right at the beginning of COVID-19. We bring the guy on, and he's talking about COVID-19. He's talking about COVID-19 outbreak on the cruise ship, and what he basically described was the most underwhelming thing I have ever heard. He was basically like, yeah, everybody's got a cold and nobody feels good, basically, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
And then he says, but the reason I bring this up is he says I forget who it was. It was the State Department or whoever was going to take all the Americans off of the cruise ship, and they were going to put them into a facility in Tracy, California. I don't know why. They just decided.
I know. Yeah.
They just decided that Tracy, California in the East Bay was the best place to put these people. And so they took these people and they put them in this facility, and they were studying COVID-19 at the time. But I could not just get it out of my mind. I was thinking that it was going to be like the movie Outbreak from 1996 with Dustin Hoffman and with Kevin Spacey. And it was going to be like people's eyes are bleeding. And instead, I'm talking to this guy, this like boomer who owns a bunch of radio stations. And he's like, yeah, no, my wife and I just have scratchy throats and we just don't feel very good.
It was underwhelming, right? It's like the slow roll. Like my husband and I talked about that. We were like, we went out, we bought like big bags of rice and all this stuff for like the end of the world. And made sure we were all prepped and expected like the apocalypse. We thought it was the only time we've ever been like this ever in our over 20 years of marriage. And then we were like, you know, I don't feel like there's a lot, going on necessarily.
So did Reichdahl say anything in terms of, you know, is there a threshold of cases in which they're going to start torturing the children again and forcing them to
No, because the primary goal is, look, they became very much aware of the fact that there were some seriously negative implications from the lockdowns and from remote learning. I mean, there are so many students whose lives are forever altered because of the remote learning. That's just a fact. My daughter being among them, she now goes to a completely separate special virtual school because she lost all ability to do school the way it used to be. Other students I know have, there's a handful that did really well in the remote situation. There's a lot who had some mental health issues, got into drugs, all kinds of different things that went on and are still trying to recover from that. And on top of that, they lost track of 30,000 students across the state. A huge amount of students who just were not in school anymore. Like kids like my daughter, their parents who got frustrated and just took their kids out of public school because it was a nightmare. And they lost money because of that, right? So there's a whole thing in the way that the schools are funded, that they have to try to fix now. So there's a lot to that. And that's another part of the recovery that they're working on right now.
Hannah Scott, I know you have to run. I know you have to go get into your dental appointment. So thank you so much for being.
I'm in no hurry, trust me.
I know that dental health is very important to you, but not as important as breaking news. So Hannah Scott, you're the best. We'll take a really quick break here on the Dory Monson Show. When we get back, Frank Dahlquist is going to be popping on. He is a former Eastside firefighter, and we're going to be hearing all about the plight of those fine men and women who are trying to get their jobs back. We'll take a really quick break, and we'll be right back right after this. Mm-hmm. Welcome back to the Dory Monson Show. Joining us is Frank Dahlquist, one of the members of several firefighters on the East Side who are standing their ground when it comes to COVID-19 vaccinations. Frank, thank you so much for coming on, my friend. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Jack. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, I've talked to this with Hannah, Dory, John Curley. We've had hour-long conversations when it comes to the people who are literally on the front lines who are now being left behind effectively because of their own personal desire to not get the vaccine for whatever reason. Maybe they have a medical reason. Maybe they have a religious reason. Maybe they have a personal preference. It doesn't really matter to me. I find it really sad that the people who literally, like the glue that holds our society together, we are now choosing to punish people for making a personal choice. And I just don't understand it. I'm curious how things are going for you in standing your ground, my friend.
Well, it's going good. I think we've seen some positive progress in local agencies around the Seattle area. We've had a couple of agencies up in Snow County that have recently brought their firefighters back under a great fanfare. So that was really good for them. And really the city of Everett really is the only one that's left remaining standing, not allowing, firefighters to come back and hold that line. In King County, the chiefs kind of colluded together in a September King County Chiefs Association meeting to not allow for accommodations as a whole, as a general policy. And that violates Title VII of the accommodations process that, individually we should be able to meet with our agency and then be able to decide whether, we can be accommodated. Well, agencies like in Pierce County work with their unions and found ways to make sure that they could keep people safe, the community, as well as, the members continuing to work. And you got to remember, these firefighters have thousands of hours of training and years of experience. And they chose, in Pierce County not to lose anybody. And so Pierce County kept all their firefighters working on the line as firefighters. And in King County, the chiefs decided to do the opposite. And apparently we weren't worth keeping.
And this is what I don't understand. Why would you not want to keep guys and gals that are trained and know what they are doing and they have thousands of hours of experience over whether or not, and this is where it becomes so trivial. We all know that the vaccine does not stop the transmission of COVID-19. We all know it. So at best, what it does is that it prevents, for some people, severe hospitalization and death. So, and that's not Jack Stein talking as some kind of crazy conspiracy theorist. That's the CDC. That's directly from the government. So I don't understand why we have to continue doing this song and dance where, well, if you're a forward-facing employee or whatever it is, knowing that the vaccine doesn't stop the transmission of the virus, it is bizarre to me. So you guys are going back and forth with Chief Jeff Clark, correct?
That's correct. Yeah. And ultimately, the fire chief, and just like any other CEO of a company, have that ability to set that policy, or at least, at an individual basis, grant accommodations. Our chief decided to do it as a general policy over the agency. And that's kind of what we're in discussions with the board of directors right now, is that they have the authority to overturn this because it was a general policy over the whole agency and not that individual basis, because it affects staffing. Which has had some major impacts in response capabilities, as well as the budget. I mean, they are $300,000 to $400,000 over budget every month, just on overtime costs alone. And that's admitted to the fire chief, and the board has that discretion to now have oversight. And that's where we're luckily having some really great conversations. And the more the community turns out to these board of directors meetings, the more we're seeing that tide turn.
Okay, and I'm glad to hear that, because I really hate to see people who, whether it's cops, sheriffs, troopers, whatever it is, firefighters, I really hate to see people who literally have the highest burden of responsibility in society get treated in this way. I find it unbelievably disrespectful. How's everybody holding up, if I can ask that? I mean, is the morale generally high amongst the 11 people in this situation?
Well, I tell you what, we have 14 members that are affected by the mandate.
Yeah.
And it's about 190 years of combined experience of just career experience. That doesn't include all of our volunteer years prior. I'm volunteering up in Snow County right now. I'm having a blast. The agencies up here are great. And so I'm still able to be a firefighter on a volunteer basis. But it's funny that I can do it safely up here. but that not in King County. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, here's the bright side. I want to have the positive message.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Our members definitely are affected. This is not just a job. It's a calling for all the people that are firefighters and first responders out there. You know, it's a passion. It's a love, right? And we love it, you know, serving the communities that we work in. And to be honest, man, it's been a roller coaster because, you know, you come to work knowing that at any given point, you're going to have to risk everything for someone else that you don't even know. And, you know, many people have, you know, stories of close calls, near misses, got injured, got hit by a car on a roadway, you know, all kinds of things. And, I mean, I've had members that have fallen through floors, you know, through a floor at a fire scene, you know, stuff like that, that, you know, you have really close calls. Luckily, we haven't had, you know, any major incidents at Eastside. But the reality is that because it's that passion, it becomes just a very emotional thing because, I mean, everything that you have done in your adult life has been to serve others. And we sacrifice, right? We say, okay, you know, we're going to do these. We're going to put ourselves into peril. We're going to see all these nasty, sick patients, right? and be like, okay, hey, if I get sick, I get sick. That becomes the job. And then to have that just kind of dismissed and thrown away, it just rocks you to the core of what you believed the fire department believes in, that the chief supported you like he always said he would, you know, that the community supports you as well. And that's what we're seeing now, that community can really come out and support the firefighters. There was a Como Twitter poll out here recently last night. I think it showed like 64% saying that the community wants us back on the job. That's impressive.
Yeah, I agree.
And that momentum is what drives us forward because in the end, this isn't about the lawsuits that are coming. This isn't about the EEOC complaints of a discrimination about age and religious beliefs. You know, this isn't about the tort filings that we're going to be doing next week for $171 million against the agency. You know, breaking news right now on your radio show. you know, it's not about that. We just want our jobs back. We just want to go back and to serve the community, right? And, you know, I got to be honest, you know, it's really, for me, it is, right? It's about the personal impact, but it's about the community impact as well. Because now that we're getting more information from the agencies, each agency in King County has this almost identical problem. They've reduced staffing to cut costs.
Right.
In our dismissals, right? Our agency is now at like about an average of $430,000 per month in overtime costs. They only budget for 120.
Wow.
On any given month. And then we've reduced two aid cars as well. So they reduced staffing, which is response capabilities. And we have documented cases multiple times now where we've had critical calls in service areas that we weren't able to respond to that an adjoining fire department would have to come to or an adjoining fire station. And delayed, severely delayed to a CPR call, as well as severely delayed to a severe motor vehicle accident. And that's because of that aid car being now out of service when they reduce staffing. And that's, you know, that's the impact to the community, right? You have good taxpayers out there that support fire departments, support first responders, but they are doing that knowing that we are going to be responsible with those tax funds. And right now, this is a choice by our fire chief. And inactive by our board to change this. And that's where it's the mismanagement of public funds. It's the mismanagement of our response capabilities that we've had for years.
I'm reading the chief's statement that he released, and it reads in part, "The department and our board are saddened by the loss of some of our firefighters, but also deeply respectful of their personal choices." There's a contradiction right there that you're not really deeply respectful of the personal choices when you let people go. That's actually the opposite, you know, that you are disrespecting someone's personal choice by letting them go. So, Frank, I really do appreciate you coming on. Any final words before we got to let you go?
Yeah, I just really appreciate the opportunity here. You know, in the end, you know, we're not, anti-max group. You know, there's about 200 firefighters in King County that are impacted right now. Many more that were forced to get the vaccine that was against their religious beliefs or medical advice by their doctors. And so we are not a group that's like anti-mask, anti-vaccine. It really comes down to a personal choice. But in the end, you know, they've discriminated against us by age because they said, we're just going to hire new firefighters at a lower cost. They've discriminated against our religious beliefs. And so, you know, that's where I think as a community, we respect everybody out there. I don't choose who my patients are or the people that we go and try to help. You know, I don't care about that kind of stuff. It's we respect all of us, right? And I don't think in our community that we can stomach this kind of discrimination that's happening. And I believe our community is now standing up and working towards a solution. And that's what we want.
Frank Dahlquist, we appreciate it very much. And I wish all the best for you, my friend.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Anytime.
And we'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back with more of the Dory Monson Show coming up right after this. Welcome back to the Dory Monson Show. Jack Stein sitting in for Mr. Dory Monson, who is enjoying himself a well-deserved day off. By the way, coming up next in the Fastest 15, I'm a big old fan of Norm Macdonald. And when I read this story yesterday, Nicole, the fact that he secretly taped a special and it's actually going to be released, I think that's one of the coolest things I've ever heard.
It really is. It's so Norm Macdonald, right?
I know. It's very Norm Macdonald. But I got to say, Nicole, you sent me a story in the show sheet today, and I'm looking at this, and I missed this. I guess this ad campaign during Mother's Day. I guess obviously I'm not spending enough time on Instagram, but the idea was that Calvin Klein decided to feature a pregnant transgender man on their Instagram page, and they released it with a statement that says, "Today, in support of women and mothers all over the world, we are spotlighting the realities of new families." That's what they wrote. And I immediately thought when I saw this, I dislike the fact that they are making a spectacle or using this new family to sell jeans and t-shirts and underwear. Like, I don't think that Calvin Klein is engaging with this in good faith whatsoever. I happen to be pretty pro-trans. I do think that trans people exist. I think that trans people deserve all of the respect that we give anybody else. And because I feel so strongly about that, I have to push back against Calvin Klein effectively prostituting these poor people on their platform in order to sell stuff. And I'm a filthy capitalist, Nicole. Like,
yeah. Oh, I agree with you. I think that live your life. I don't care how people want to live their lives, but I do think that they do these things just for the publicity. And I agree with you. It's a spectacle and it's a stunt. And they've done it with babies that have, you know, things different about them and made them, you know, Gerber babies or whatever, spokesperson for whatever. And I just think it's an effort to get more attention, which just do it. And don't say you're doing it. And yeah, I agree with you. It's kind of like pimping them out.
Right. It's the same thing that Jerry Springer used to do in many ways. And that's what I find so offensive about it, is that like these people are experiencing something that is exceptionally unique. There are not a lot of trans men out there that choose to go through IVF and then birth children. It's exceptionally, exceptionally rare. I know a ton of trans people. Most of the trans people that I know get both top and bottom surgery. But when they say bottom surgery, generally they have the uterus removed. And so when I see something like this, I can only think of, again, the spectacle that Calvin Klein is trying to make out of this poor family. And I understand that the family agreed to it, but had they been friends of mine, I might have recommended to them, I understand that you want to showcase your life decisions for other people, but also think of the way that people are going to interpret this and the nastiness that is going to come as a result of this, from maybe people who don't understand the exceptionally unique nature of your life. And I'll just give you an example. Steven Crowder is an online comedian. He is a very, very popular. I think he's the most popular conservative YouTuber on the platform. He's got like 5.5 million subscribers. And Steven, for as much as he does great investigative journalism and for as much as he does great content, he can also be a bully and he can nitpick at these kinds of cultural moments. And so he says something like this. He says, "We have a huge baby formula shortage. The left says men are the root of all problems, so it's only fair to blame pregnant men, right? I wonder what Calvin Klein has to say about this." And then he says, # Calvin Klein. And this is what I would have told these people, Nicole. I would have said, "I don't want to see your life being abused by other people. I don't want to see you being bullied by other people unnecessarily so that Calvin Klein can sell jeans and t-shirts and underwear. And here's the other crazy thing about this, Nicole. In the ad, I don't know, did you notice that they were both wearing Calvin Klein underwear? Did you notice this?
Well, I did because I recognized that it was a Calvin Klein ad, but it's right. not really that obvious. Right.
Right. And so that's what makes it just so like, oh, man.
Kind of like Leah Thomas, right? So
you
recognize there's a difference. We all know there's a difference. So stop making it a spectacle. Just, you know, live your life and stop thinking that the world revolves around you, because the world doesn't revolve around any single one of us.
Yeah. You know, this is the other thing that comes up. Like my very good trans friend, Claire, she lives a very normal life. She has her wife. They've got a couple of huskies. She works for the DOD. No one is going to make a Calvin Klein ad about my friend Claire because she just lives a regular, what we would consider to be like a pretty traditional lifestyle, right? I think what corporations are doing is they go out and they try to find the exception to the rule, and then they make an ad campaign out of it. And then they say, look at how good and look at how pious we are and look at how aware we are of people's life circumstances, so on and so forth, not realizing that this is the kind of thing that requires they're making it something that it's not, right? They're making it something that is abnormal when it is in fact just kind of like an exceptional circumstance. And I just find it to be so gross in so many ways that Calvin Klein would make this decision, again, to sell t-shirts and jeans and all this other stuff. It just seems so this is one of the worst aspects, I think, to corporations now and marketing now, where they feel the need to showcase what are otherwise very private moments in people's lives and then use that as a beacon or an indicator that they are somehow, quote-unquote, woke, if you want to use that terminology or that phrasing, or that they are deserved of your consumership, right? That we are very trans-inclusive, ipso facto, you should come buy our stuff. And that's something that I really push back against. You've got a quality product, Calvin Klein. I'm sure that it sells itself, right? So this effort to go out of your way to try to showcase, look at how good we are, is a massive turnoff to someone like me when it comes to... do you own Calvin Klein, by the way, Nicole? You Calvin Klein consumer?
You know what? I have Calvin Klein bedding. I love their bedding.
Yep. So why don't we do an ad, Calvin Klein, which is like me and Nicole, and mm-hmm. it's like Nicole, and she's got her bed sheets, and then yep. I've got my Calvin Klein shirts, and then we go, this stuff is great. We like this stuff. It's good.
Yep.
Do we need all this side fluff? Does it need to be like, oh yeah, Nicole's a producer on the Dory Monson Show, Jack Stein's on it. No, we just, it does itself, right? So that's my ultimate conclusion on this. All right, we'll take a really quick break. When we get back in the Fastest 15, like I said, we've got Norm MacDonald, as well as, let me just scroll down here really quick, Elon Musk putting the Twitter takeover on hold, and apparently calling men bald is now sexual harassment in the UK. So we'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back with the Dory Monson Show right after this.